The following recording was made the 31st of March, 1969, in New York City, as one of the Bucks County Seminar House series. The speaker is Baba Ram Das, formerly Dr. Richard Alpert.
Except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Ye are the living temples of God. I and my Father are one. There is one alone, and there is not a second. And we, if we only know, are eternally it. From a fortune cookie, the wild geese do not intend to cast their reflections. The water has no mind to receive their image. Wild geese do not intend to cast their reflections. The water has no mind to receive their image. If you knew who you are, and I know who I am, when you add all of us up, you come to the number one. If you and I were being who we truly are, there would only be one of us here. One awareness, one consciousness. All these bodies like fingers and toes. And from our oneness, from our niche in the wall where the candle flame never flickers when the wind blows. From this inner place where we all are eternally, we would watch the drama taking place at 77th Street and 3rd Avenue. We would watch he who speaks and they who listen. And as we looked into each of them, some of them would know that though they are speaking, they are not speaking, and though they are listening, they are not listening. And others wouldn't know that, and we'd see they're really busy listening. They think they are he who is listening. They really think they walked in here, sat down, and they're listening. I am listening. I want to know. And from our place of one consciousness, we would feel great compassion. Great compassion. For I am the wild goose, and I have no intention to cast my reflection. There is speaking happening, and maybe it's hard for you to understand, or maybe there is a place in you that understands when I say, though I am speaking, I am not speaking. Though I am here, I am not here. Inside of me is going on a mantra. A mantra that reminds me who I really am, over and over again. And from this inner place where this mantra is going on, even as I speak to you, I'm just watching with great awe, wonder, the awesome drama of nature unfold before my very eye. Before my eye, before that inner eye which sees all and knows all, the drama that is this drama. And on inside goes, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Always bringing me right to my heart, where I dwell eternally. But now we came here all laden with games. Laden with our dramatic roles. I mean, we've all learned our parts so well. We're masters at playing our parts. I'm a serious young student. I really want to know. I'm a woman. I'm the Earth Mother. I'm a responsible member of this society. I'm young and impressionable. I'm really confused, man. I'm all screwed up. I'm pretty happy. I just want to hear what the scene's about. I'm a holy man. That is the... Those are the parts that are available for the evening. Pick your part. There's only one of us. We've got to play all these parts. That's all right. Don't get uptight. We have a... multitudinous forms. We can be the bus driver on 3rd Avenue, the North Vietnamese in the woods. We haven't begun tonight to dig who we can be. We just move in slowly. So we play our parts, but let's not forget that these are just parts we've taken on for this particular drama. But we came in here bearing our parts because we've learned them so well. I mean, you've been sitting home practicing your part. You were taught your script. Mother, father, coaches, you've had extraordinary coaches. Taught you your parts so well. So that you are an exquisite, exquisite response mechanism. Feed in outcomes. I used to do a questionnaire when I was a psychologist called Who Am I? List five things of who am I. Answer the question. Give it to a junior high school student. I am Carol Brown. I am in the eighth grade. I am a girl. I am an American. I am going to become a nurse. Five answers to who am I. Give it to a Harvard senior. Who am I? I am man. I am a biological complex. I am a point in time and space. I am David Smith. I am 21. Give it to an Indian saint. Who am I? I am God. I am eternal. I am. Blank, blank. How can we get here and now, this evening, turn off all of our dramatic parts, or let's let them run on? I mean, you can run on being who you've been, but let's just not get hung up in them. Let's be here together. How do we do that? Well, we have been going through a procedure of purification, which is useful, quite helpful. And we call upon a being who I will explain later to you about where he lives. This being is called Guru Rinpoche, or Padmasambhava. And Padmasambhava was the man who introduced Buddhism to Tibet. And this is a very important period in Padmasambhava's influence for us. He is depicted in these tanka reproductions on either side. And in order to call upon Padmasambhava to bring us here and now, you will do the following. You will imagine Padmasambhava, who is sitting on a lotus in the middle of a lake. And you will imagine him directly out from the middle of your eyebrows, and then go up about a 30 degree angle and imagine him out there, just a little above your head, out there. He is entirely made up of light. He sits on a throne . It is the sun throne of wisdom, and he is the eternal child who sits there. Thank you. In his right hand, he holds the lightning bolt of the method of becoming eternal, the upaya. And in his left, he holds the cup, which is filled with ambrosia. It's filled with moksha. Filled with bliss. He has cut off the heads of aversion, attachment, and confusion, and he wears them as ornaments on his trident, which he holds to his side as his consort. He sits unmoving in meditation. He chants hum and fum, drunk upon highest happiness. The Buddhas of the past, present, and the future shine forth through the pores of his skin. His youthful smile is full of compassion. Victory is his crown. Imagining now this being of pure light out in front of us, with eyes closed, you will first need to purify your body and mind before you can invite Guru Rinpoche into your Hridayam, or spiritual heart. The first thing you're going to get rid of is roga and ruga, which are disease and attachment. In order to get rid of all of the physical hang-ups and all of the attachments to your melodrama that keep you from being here and now, you will breathe all these things out, and they're going to come out a dark red, and they will come out of your right nostril when you, now if you're not tuned in on astral vision at this point, you may not see the dark red just yet, but you can imagine it. You will breathe three times out the right nostril, and each time imagine you're breathing out all of the physical hang-ups and all of the attachments that keep you stuck, right? Three times. Now out the left nostril, a blue-gray in color, you will breathe out mental obstacles and anger. Think of all the people that got you hung up today, got you uptight, all the people that angered you, all the people you still get angry when you think about, and get that anger into you. Really think about them until you're really angry. And then breathe it all out, a kind of a blue-gray out the left nostril. Okay? Three times out the left nostril. Should have a fan to clear away all of its vibrations. And then out the mouth, purple in color, three times you will breathe out sloth, inertia, the heaviness, the stone-like quality, tamasya, all the qualities that keep you from getting on with it, all that kind of Three times, purple out the mouth, Now imagining Guru Rinpoche sitting out there on his lotus, imagine coming from his ajna, the point right between his eyebrows, a beam of white light that comes directly to your ajna, a beam that burns right into you, and it burns out all of the physical impurities. It just keeps working on the physical impurities. Feel it burn through you. Om. And then from his ajna, the same place, to your throat, a red beam which burns out of you all untruths, all lies, all wrongness of speech. Ah. And then a blue beam that comes from his spiritual heart to your spiritual heart, your Hridayam. And this blue beam burns out all impurities of thought, all the thoughts that keep you from being an enlightened being, from knowing who you truly are. Hung. And now let that blue beam become a broad blue avenue. And down that avenue comes Guru Rinpoche himself. Pure light, pure love, pure awareness, pure energy, total wisdom. Absolute power. And he comes into your own heart, and he resides there, and when you know who you truly are, you and he are one. You are composed of pure love, pure light, pure energy, your wisdom, infinite power. And his mantra is Aum Ahung Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hung. Aum Ahung Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hung. Aum Ahum Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hum. Aum Ahum Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hum.
Aum Ahum
Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hum. Aum is the unmanifest. Aum is the eternal, formless, the void. Aum is what lies behind all. Aum. Ah is the immanence for manifestation. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the sound which is later to turn into form, the immanent, is Ah. Hung the manifest. Hung manifest. All of the forms in the universe are Hung, Hum, Om Ah Hung. Vajra, lightning bolt. Three in one, the three in one lightning bolt, Vajra Guru, the lightning bolt wisdom, guru, wisdom. Om Ahun Vajra Guru Padme. Padme means lotus, and it also means unbearable compassion. The three-in-one lightning bolt, guru of wisdom inside you, of unbearable compassion, siddhi of infinite power, hung is manifest, hung heart is manifest in my heart. Om Ah Hung Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hung. The three in one, the unmanifest, the immanent, and the manifest, all are Padmasambhava, and they are made up of unbearable compassion when they view the form and the three in one is infinite power, and it all resides in my very heart. And if I can go within to my own heart, to my spiritual heart, my Hridayam, I will then know I am He. I am He. I am He. It is from this place in our heart cave where we now are that we watch the entire drama that is our lives. We watch the illusion with unbearable compassion. Compassion meaning empathy, meaning a true understanding of how it is. A kind of empathy you can only have when you have quieted your mind down enough and transcended your ego enough so you can hear how it really is. So when you are with a candle flame, you are the candle flame. When you're with another being's mind, you are the other being's mind. When there is a task to do, you are the task. The mindless quality of total involvement that only comes when the ego is quieted and there is no attachment. It is only when you reside quietly in your own Hridayam that you become He of total light, unbearable compassion, and infinite power. Had ye but faith, ye could move mountains, said Yesu. And that is literally true. The Bible is not a metaphor, it's not a story made up to teach us how to be moral beings. It's a straight message of how it is when man lives in the Spirit. And the Spirit is right inside, and in order to get into the Spirit is not a whole lot of hocus-pocus. It's a very simple, methodical, mechanical set of steps, but they are only available to him who can hear. Let those who have ears hear. Teach not he who does not want to know. The whole game is based on faith. What you may not perhaps understand is the whole game you've been playing thus far is also based on faith. You have had faith in your senses. You have had faith in your rational mind. We are living in a society which is a total temple dedicated to the rational man. Even though the first commandment says, there is only one God, thou shalt take no other God but me. even though that's said and we repeat it, we still worship the rational man. We worship our own sense data. It's only when you see the assumptions you've already been functioning on that you can start to extricate yourself. You have got to have heard the first message before any of the keys open anything, because you don't even know there are doors until you've heard the first message. Georges Gurdjieff was a Westerner who went this entire trip, or at least a large part of it. He said, "You don't seem to understand. You are in prison." He said, "If you were to get out of prison, the first thing you must realize is you're in prison. If you think you're free, you can't escape." See the problem? If you think you're free, you can't escape. There's another way of saying it. If you think the games you have going are what lead to what it is you're seeking in life, forget it. Forget this trip entirely. What is required for this trip, what is required to go within, to accept ye become as little children, ye shall not enter the kingdom of heaven, to go the entire trip again, you have to have experienced despair. You have to have experienced a giving up of the faith in the systems you've had going thus far. It's a necessary prerequisite. It's a necessary prerequisite. One of the beings who has written a very useful book at one stage of one's journey is Uspensky, who was a student of Gurdjieff and a philosopher in his own right. And he said, and he explained on page 5 why it is that he isn't a realized being. Although I don't think he meant to say it quite that way. And he's describing different schools and what they taught, different secret schools. And he says, "There was another type of school with which I was unable to make contact and of which I only heard. These schools promised very much, but they also demanded very much. They demanded everything at once. It would have been necessary to stay in India and give up thoughts of returning to Europe, to renounce all my own ideas, aims, and plans, and proceed along a road of which I could know nothing beforehand. These schools interested me very much, and the people who had been in touch with them and who told me about them stood out distinctly from the common type. But still it seemed to me that there ought to be schools of a more rational kind, and that a man had the right, up to a certain point, to know where he was going. That a man had the right, up to a certain point, to know where he was going. When the sirens go by, these are huge amounts of energy. Just pass the energy through you, right, and you pass it up your spine, and it really blows your mind if you do it right. It's gratuitous energy handed to you. Free trip, courtesy of... See, Uspensky wasn't willing to do that one thing, to give up knowing he knew. And the funny thing about the rational mind is it's taken us so far, and then it becomes the lion at the gates. It's so seductive, it looks like it's going to give us the whole business. And then, lo and behold, it holds us back at a certain point. Because we are so rewarded for knowing we know. And it's only when you come to the despair that seeing, when you look around at where man has gotten with his rational mind, and you suddenly understand that he's just going from the frying pan into the fire. And you look at the Herculean task that he has outlined for himself, and you realize that his rational mind just isn't going to be enough. I mean, you add up all the, quote, intellectuals in the world. Who do you want to put the man's destiny in? Whose hands? Herman Kahn? I don't. Who? I mean, I can't find a model. I don't see wise men. I see rational, super rationalists, McGeorge Bundy. Super rationalists. Exquisite minds. But as Einstein said, when atomic energy was released for man's control and benefit, he said, man must develop a higher form of thought if he is ever going to be able to use this energy with wisdom. Because his rational mind's not going to do it. It's not going to be enough. That's the despair. That's the despair. All the eggs, all the basket we put the eggs in just isn't going to make the trip to grandmother's house. It's just not going to do it. And the answer, strangely enough, is in the simple words, here and now. If you could be here and now, if you could for one moment turn off your mind, see, you don't have to listen to this lecture like you're doing. You don't have to be evaluating, categorizing, thinking about it, putting it away in storage units, analyzing the words to make sure you understand them. You can let it all go through you, just like Chinese food, and just let it go through, and you'll understand it all, because there's nothing I'm saying to you that there isn't a place in you where you already know it. Now, I'm going to have to move slowly till you understand what I just told you. But you can trust. That's the first requirement, trust, you see. You've got to give up that kind of thing. You've got to give up the reaching for it to have it. As long as you reach, you can't have it. This whole trip that I'm talking about is fraught with paradoxes. The most exquisite paradoxes. As soon as you give it all up, you can have it all. How about that one? As long as you want power, you can't have it. The minute you don't want power, you'll have more than you ever dreamed possible. What a weird thing. What a weird thing. As long as you have an ego, you're on a limited trip. You're on a little trivial trip that's going to last roughly 60 years, 70 years, 80 years. Fraught with fear of its end, trying to make its own eternity. Eternal name by leaving a stone building, perhaps. Being is dying by loving. Something in me must die, and something new must be born. He that is born of the flesh is of the flesh. He that is born of the spirit is of the spirit. unless ye be born again, ye cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. We're talking about a metamorphosis. We're talking about going from the caterpillar to the moth. We're talking about how to become butterflies. How do we become butterflies? I mean, the caterpillar that's walking around doesn't say, well, man, soon I'll be a moth. Because as long as he's being busy being a caterpillar, he can't be a moth. It's only when caterpillarness is done that one starts to become a moth. And that, again, is part of this paradox. You can't rip away caterpillarness. The whole trip occurs in an unfolding process under which you have, over which you have no control. That's a hard one. Well, what am I doing here if I have no control? You mean I don't have any choice? Can I say this is nonsense? Can I say this is important? Your lecture changed my whole life. You think that's choice? You think that's choice? No. Not at all. It's an unfolding process. If you could stand back far enough and watch the whole process, you would see that you are a totally determined being. The moment you will wake up is totally determined. How long you will stay asleep is totally determined. What you will hear of what I say is totally determined. There are no accidents in this business at all. Accidents are just from where you're looking at it from. To the ego, it all looks like it's miracles and accidents. No miracles, no accidents. It's just your vantage point you're sort of stuck in. Before I proceed, I want to advise you that when you leave here this evening, whoever it is that leaves, you will be offered, which you may accept or not as you choose, an additional crutch to help you with your work, which will be a reproduction of this tanka of Padmasambhava. I met a tulku, a very high incarnation, a Tibetan incarnation in Sarnath in India. And he had brought this tanka from Tibet, and he was very interested in having this tanka, having Guru Rinpoche available to people in the West at this time. And so he and I together shared the expense and involvement of having these reproduced. It's very, very beautiful reproduction. And they are not for sale, they are priceless. You are given one. And may I just enjoin you, if you're going to take one, don't take it unless you feel it in your heart. But if you would like Guru Rinpoche's help by your puja table or by your meditation cove or wherever it is that you cool yourself out from the life drama, Guru Rinpoche should be hung slightly at 30 degrees above, right? And then he'll watch out for things. He'll keep you cool. He's quite a gas, and you can read about him. He's written about in books. He did some far out things. Well, if I am not speaking, and if I am not what I thought I am, how did I get into this predicament and who am I? For only when I know who I am will I know what is possible. And furthermore, I can ask the question, how will I know who I am? There are three ways in which one knows about what we are talking about this evening. One way you know about it is by direct experience. Through some way or other, through being alone in the desert, through falling in love, through bearing a child, through nearly dying or some other trauma, through turning on through yoga, through taking any one of your senses and pushing it to beyond itself, going through it, you have touched a place inside yourself that has an intuitive validity. An intuitive validity. It's intuitively valid. Inside, you know it's right. Many of you had an experience. I've been with literally now, perhaps over 100 people who have had an experience which was powerful and valid. It was so discontinuous with their normal consciousness that it scared them so badly that they screamed for help, and the help that was available to them were a group of minds which said, "That's all right, you have just gone crazy." That is, the experience you've just had is the experience of psychosis. William James said, "Our normal waking consciousness is but one form of consciousness, whilst all about it, parted from it by the filmiest of veils, screens, there lie other types of consciousness entirely different. We may pass through our entire lives without suspecting their existence, but apply the requisite stimulus, and at a touch, they are there in all their completeness. Special types of mentality, each probably somewhere having its field of application and adaptation. No view of the universe in its totality can be complete which leaves these other forms of consciousness quite disregarded. But how to regard them is the question. They determine attitudes, though they fail to furnish a formula. They open regions, though they do not give a map. At any rate," concludes James, "they forbid our premature closing of our accounts with reality." He said that somewhere around probably 1906, something like that. In spite of what he said, we've closed our accounts with reality, most of us. That experience you had is psychotic. I will give you Thorazine. It is not valid. You are hallucinating. What do you mean you're God? do you mean you're God? The experience may have come to you directly that way, or it may have come to you through inference. Through your intellect, you may have reasoned and reasoned and reasoned until you saw the peculiar position that rational man is in, and you realize there must be something else, although you've not experienced it. You just infer the presence of something else. It doesn't quite make sense. Nothing turns you on. You haven't experienced it directly. But you figure there must be something there. I mean, you read all of the writings of St. John of the Cross and Teresa and on, all of the mystics and visionaries through recorded history, and you say, well, they can't all be nuts. They must be talking about something. So you sort of infer the presence of this other thing, but you don't know about it. Now, that's a tougher one to be in that position. Then the third way is that you trust the fact that there are realized beings and they've said it and therefore you know it to be true. It's not inference anymore. It's not an intellectual process. You just accept what they have said. That's faith. See, we have gotten so super sophisticated in our evaluative mechanisms that you question everything you hear. How do you know you're not being hustled? I mean, you know, what was Jesus up to? What was the thing about? What do they want? What's the game? What's the game, man? You know, what's he into? What's he into? And that you especially feel if you are one of the keepers of the tables in the temple. If you are committed to an existing system with great attachment. With great attachment. Some way or other, though, most of you in this room, most of you, not all of you, but most of you have sensed the possibility. It happened to me the first time I took psilocybin, a synthetic chemical. It's a synthetic of the Tiananoctil, the Mexican mushroom, which is commonly known in the mountains as the flesh of the gods, Tiananoctil. And you ingest 9 mushrooms, 5 male and 4 female mushrooms. And you transcend your ego. And you see how it all is. And you go through the doorway into the magic theater. You may even get beyond the magic theater. You might get to the clear white light, all the way to nirvikalpa samadhi. You go just as far as you can give up to go. Some people use this method and they say, wow, dig the colors and lights. Some say, boy, I feel so close to other people interpersonally. Some say, wow, you and I are one. Some say, why, there isn't even a you and I. It's just energy. Some say, it's all and everything and nothing. It's the void. And they're beyond words. You go just as far as you're ready to go. Those are all stages on the path. They are also known as the physical, astral, and causal planes. Same thing. Different words. How high did you get in the last trip? How high? Well, I went into Hiranyaloka, an upper level of the astral plane. Right? And you can get pretty good at chronicling the whole thing when you understand how the chronicle works, how the pattern is designed, how the system is designed. You went through the door, but you get thrown out. At least I got thrown out. Maybe you didn't get thrown out. If you didn't get thrown out, you are a realized being. And if you're a realized being, you're not here. So everybody here has at least been thrown out or never got in. Right? Here we are, outcasts. We've all been rejected. We all came to the wedding feast, and we weren't wearing the wedding garment, and we got bound hand and foot and cast into outer darkness, and here we are. Right, this is a meeting of outer darkness. And there was much crying and gnashing of teeth. That's what he said. It's all on a level. It's all straight. I mean, he's telling you just how it is. That's what's so far out about it. Absolutely so far out. So what happened to me was I went through the doorway and I thought, oh, wow, it isn't like I thought it was at all. I mean, if I'm going to spend my whole life manipulating this puny ego through a set of power games and a set of sensual gratifications, and what's the payoff? The end is it's going to all end anyway because it's all in time. And suddenly I dig that who I am at that moment when I'm, quote, stoned, quote, high, I am out of time. I am out of space. But boy, does it feel valid. Does it feel real? It feels like the first real thing that's ever happened to me. Everything else had a certain, like, hustle quality to it. And except my suffering. I mean, I was really into my suffering. I mean, you really get into your suffering. Self-pity, that's real. You know, everything else may go, but boy, you got to suffer. And we're just coming out of the dark night of the Protestant ethic. You know, suffer, baby. That's the only way you'll be good. Suffer some more. Come on, really suffer. Oh, feels so good. It hurts so bad. We've all been the trip. We've all been the trip. Suffering is great. It's like straightening by fire. It's purifying. It's very good. But the funny thing about one another paradox, this trip requires total suffering, but it's got to be suffering that's no suffering. I mean, you just got to go the whole suffering trip, but you can't be the guy that's suffering. Do you think, by the way, that when Christ is standing there and they're nailing nails in, he says, oh, man, does that hurt? He's probably looking at the guy that's nailing it in with absolute compassion. He digs why the cat's doing it, what he's stuck in, how much dust covers his eyes, why he's got to be doing it. That's the way it is. He said the night before, he says, well, tomorrow is the big trip. I got to go on it. You know, I'm going to go do this thing. Yeah, right. There are the nails. Wow, look at that. I go to the dentist, and the dentist says, I'm going to have to drill near a nerve. I'll give you Novocaine. No, don't give me Novocaine. What do you mean you want Novocaine? It'll be terrible. It's pain. It's interesting. Well, all right. Boy, it's pain. It's really interesting. It really is interesting. But who am I? Am I he who is being pained? No, that's the thing. Once you know that, then pleasure and pain and fame and shame and loss and gain are all the same. They're all all just happening to you. They're just like, you know, that you're standing on a bridge watching it go by. Wow! Wow, look at that. Boy, ooh. Once you have seen through the illusion, and that, as I told you, wasn't your choice. It just was your karma that at this particular lifetime, and I know you all went through changes when I say this particular lifetime. You mean there were other lifetimes? You mean you believe in reincarnation? Well, I'll take you through that very gradually in about 5 minutes. We're going to go the whole trip tonight. It's last night, let's blow it all. For some reason or other, this trip, you woke up. I mean, you went through lots of trips before this, and you can see all the trips you went through out on the street. You're meeting them all the time. Guy carrying the burden of his personality through life. I've spent 32 years in analysis, and I'm now coping. Boy, he's not going to make it this round. But the moment has come where the veil just gets thin enough so that you see through for a second. So that when you go to church on Sunday and they read, they sing a hymn. Humbly I adore thee, Verity unseen, who thy glory hidest neath these shadows mean. Lo, to thee surrendered, my whole heart is bowed, tranced as it beholds thee, shrined within the cloud. That's a hymn from the Episcopalian hymnal, Protestant hymnal. Okay, the words were St. Thomas Aquinas. Now, you could very easily be somebody who's gone to the Episcopal church of a Sunday morning because somebody took you or because you were looking, and you may have sung, Humbly I adore thee, verity unseen. Just think of all the thousands of people who sing that and they don't know what it's talking about. They're just doing the words as if it's like praying to idols. They're doing the words as if the words are going to do it to them. But the seed hasn't been planted. The veil hasn't lifted. They're on an ego trip. Look how good I am going to church. It's called the golden chain in India. The golden chain. They're good people. See, they're not bad people. Bad people are like doing heavy things. They're laying heavy things on each other. Of course, good people are laying heavy things on each other too, but the word heavy is too complicated to use. In fact, it's going through a metamorphosis, it's got a whole new meaning now. But good people are in a tricky position because they're doing what the outward manifestation of the thing is, but the inner thing isn't happening. It's very poignant. Very poignant. But it's all right, because they're going in the right direction. Another round or two. Another round or two, and they'll make it. They'll hear the words that they're singing. I go to church in the little town I live in New Hampshire. And all the people sing these hymns, and nothing's happening. They walk in all uptight, and they walk out all uptight. Maybe they're a little calmer. I see them, and lights flash, and I get so stoned, I want to run down the aisle and shout, Whoa! You know, listen to those words, man. It's really here. You're singing about it all, just the way it really is. It's really like the book says. It's not like you think it is at all. psychotic. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. Careful. That psychosis business is an interesting business. You see, if you go through the doorway too fast and you're not ready for it, and you're getting bound hand and foot and thrown out in outer darkness, you may land anywhere. And lots of people land in mental hospitals. And the reason they do that is because they went in through the door with their ego. See, they said, like, wow, I've been invited to the wedding feast. I mean, dig me! Sam Jones in heaven. You know, Sam Jones standing at the right side of the Lord. There's the Lord, and there's Gabriel, and there's Sam Jones. They don't understand that you got to die to be born. That only when you have been born again do you enter the kingdom of heaven. So they've gone in on the first round. And what happens is they go on a huge ego trip. And it's called the Messianic Complex. It's called paranoia. Delusions of grandeur. I have a brother who is in a mental hospital. He thinks he is Christ. Well, that's groovy. I am Christ also. But he doesn't think I'm Christ. He just thinks he's Christ. Because it happened to him, and he took his ego with him. So he says, like, I'm special. And when I say to him, sure, man, you're Christ, I'm Christ too, he says, you don't understand. And so when he's out, he steals cars and things like that because he needs them. Because he's Christ, it's all right. So they lock him up. He says, I don't know. He said, me, I'm a responsible member of society. I go to church. Me, they put in a mental hospital. You've got a beard, you wear a dress. You're out free. Sure, because as far as I'm concerned, we're all God. That's the difference. That's the difference. And if you really think another guy's God, he doesn't lock you up. It's funny about that. But you got to be really pure. You got to really think it. You can't just make believe you think it. Anything less than total purity, back out in the outer darkness, send him around again. Send him around again. That's what you learn after a couple of hundred psychedelic trips. Boy, I might as well get straight because I'm getting to feel like a yo-yo. You know, I keep going up and coming down, up and down. As long as there's an up and down, as long as there's a high and a low in your head, outer darkness. As long as you're in the world of yin and yang, outer darkness. It takes a lot of purification. Purification of what? Purification of thought, purification of body, freedom from attachment. Freedom from attachment. After a long time of going up and down, without understanding why I was going up and down or how to stop it, how to stop the going down, slowly, slowly it dawned on me. Now, why did I keep trying? The answer is very simple, and almost all of you know the answer already. The answer is, once the seed is in you, you don't have any choice. Again, it's karma. I mean, I keep raising that nasty word, and I'll define it in a moment, but it's built into you. Once you have seen what it all is like, you just can't go back to playing bridge. It just doesn't make it. It's like, imagine you're prepubescent. You're just at puberty, see? And you have been playing Ollie Ollie Infree, hide and seek. Or you've been playing baseball, and you collect baseball cards, and you're really into collecting baseball cards and Coca-Cola caps that have baseball players, and you're really into it. I mean, it's really important. Really important. And then some strange thing happens, uncontrolled by you, and you find yourself turned on by the chick next door. And through some strange set of circumstances, you find yourself kissing her, and all kinds of lights flash. Well, from that moment on, the baseball cards are just different. They're just different. You can go back and say, well, that's all interesting, but the baseball cards are really what's important. That's called defense. The thing happened, the seed got planted. No turning back. Once you sense the possibility, once you just feel that other thing inside of you, you start in this most almost, it's completely unconscious mechanism of searching, listening for the messages. Do you know? Do you know? Do you have the key? Where's the next message? Where's the next message? And the interesting thing is, there is always the next message, and it's always available to you. Now, that's a hard one. Some of you, I mean, this is like, I'm going through this thing of like people saying, what's going to happen when you go away? Who's going where, first of all? Second of all, it has nothing to do with me. The process is going on in each individual. Whenever you're ready, you hear the next message. The next message is where you are when you're ready to hear the next message. If you come here this evening and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, you're not ready to hear this message. And you can be sitting here and there's no message. Somebody else comes here and they say, wow, that's the message I was waiting for. Both of you are in this room at this very moment. The handwriting is always on the wall saying, magic theater for madmen only, price of admission, your mind. Hermann Hesse's metaphor from Steppenwolf. Always there. The question is, can you see it? The funny thing about all of the secrets of the East, or of the secrets of mysticism, is they're not secrets. Nobody's saying, don't tell him. They're telling you, they're yelling at it. He's saying, except ye be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. That's a secret. Think of how many times you heard that, and you said, well, yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, great. That's a minister talking. He's doing his thing. He's got to earn a living, too. He's a good guy. Because you can't, it isn't a, the secret is a secret to you because of where your head is at. Your receiving mechanism isn't tuned for that particular frequency. Okay, now, no nonsense, how do I really think it is? I've been on a trip now. My trip has taken me through psychology, more or less responsibly. Then it took me from my academic career, psychology, into psychedelics and exploring the within chemically. which led me to end my psychology career rather dramatically by being fired from Harvard. Then I pursued the psychedelics for a long time, and then I got that feeling of being a yo-yo, and then I finally went to the East looking for seeing if anybody knew anything else, since I didn't know enough to figure out how to do this trip. I couldn't stay inside the door. I didn't know what to do next. I kept reading the books, but I didn't understand them. They were yelling the secrets, but I couldn't hear them because I was looking at them from the wrong place. That was my problem. And I couldn't get my head in the right place to see where they were about, because I still wanted to know I knew, see? I was still Western rational man. We'll figure this thing out. Psychic phenomena, very interesting. We certainly must do further research. So I went and I looked and I looked and I looked, and as long as I looked like a rational man looking, I didn't find anything. I just found my own shadow all the time. So all you can ever find is yourself. You only read yourself, you only talk to yourself, you only ever know yourself. That's all there is. That's all there is, strangely enough. And then I gave up. I saw that my whole game didn't work. Didn't work. It gave me all the rewards that were seemed to be offered, but it didn't work. It didn't, you know, there was that place in me that knew it wasn't working. I knew there was something else, and I couldn't get to it. Couldn't get to it. That point I gave up, and then I was ready for the next message, and then the next message was standing right there, was sitting right in the hippie restaurant, the Blue Tibetan restaurant, in Kathmandu, Nepal. And the message took me by the hand and took me the whole trip and took me to my next message giver, who was a being who had finished the trip. He didn't come down anymore. He was inside the gates. There he was. He was a realized being. And he did the thing. He blew my mind. He finished me with my rational trip. That is a brief chronology of the series of dramas that unfolded in this illusion that one calls sadhana, or spiritual path. Now, after having studied psychology and guided psychedelic trips and read Eastern books and met realized beings and listened to innumerable stories from people about other realized beings and their own trips and inner heads and been a psychotherapist for 10 years and all, this is the way it looks to me. I'm not asking anybody to buy anything. There's no sale going on here. No sale. Because there's nobody sending a message. You and I are here. We're observing this process. That's all that's going on. If I'm trying to convince you, I might just as well pack up my whatever holy men have and wend my way down Third Avenue. Because if I'm trying, I can be assured of failure. There's no trying, because there's no you and there's no me. Here we are. We're just exploring how it is. I'm our mouth. I'm our mouth. I once took LSD with Alan Watts and his wife, and he started to talk, and he talked for 8 hours. And at first I got uptight. I mean, you know, like, I know something. Why doesn't he ask me, you know? He just going to talk all night? And then it dawned on me that he was just our mouth. He was our mouth, and it was beautiful because every time our thoughts didn't fit with what he was saying, what he was saying would change. He was extremely sensitive, and he was the most erudite mouth I've ever spoken through. How is it then? Statement number one. We, rational man, is not the highest being on the evolutionary scale at this moment. There are beings that are realized beings that do not live in bodies whose awareness functions at a higher rate of vibration than ours does. They do not process data through gross senses, through eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, or do they know through their intellect? That's statement number one. Statement number two. We are all eligible to enter the next evolutionary stage to the extent that we are able to extricate ourselves from the time-space locus in which we find ourselves. By which I mean changing one's vibrational rate, if you will. Available to everybody. It has nothing to do with you got to wait till you die. It's available right here now, this minute, here and now. In fact, if you could turn off your senses and turn off your intellect right now, you'd be here. You'd really be here. It's as simple as that. You don't have to plan, shall I go become enlightened or become a physicist? It doesn't work that way. You don't have to do that trick. If you think of mass as solid, that's because you are trusting your senses and you look at something and it looks solid most of the time if you're at the usual way of seeing things. Everybody agrees it's solid. When it hits you, it hurts. It must be real. When you get a little more sophisticated in rational ways, if you get a little further into physics, you understand about the relation of mass and energy, and you understand that what appears as mass only appears that way because of the nature of the receiving apparatus of your senses. And that in fact, all solids are in fact just energy, they're patterns of energy. That you could call them slowed down light. Slowed down light. And when it is slowed down and forms into certain patterns, it gets gross enough so you can see it through your eyes. It's just like going from infrared or ultraviolet through the spectrum of the visual field. When the rate, the vibration rate changes, you can see it. Or if it gets to a point where you can't see it or can't hear it. If it gets too high, only dogs can hear it. You can't hear it. As you go up in that rate of that frequency, that vibrational frequency, you get to light. You get to thought. See, the reason we can't measure thought yet, really, is because we just don't have apparatuses for measuring at those vibrational rates yet. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of cases of people transmitting thought from one being to another. I once visited J.B. Rhine down at Duke, North Carolina, and J.B. was sitting there with this peculiar position on his desk, piled like yay high, and in closets are letters from thousands of people describing the experience of thought transmission. But when he tries to do it in the laboratory, he can only do a little better than chance. It's like, we know it exists, but we can't know we know it. It's one of those problems. Can't know we know it. Keep going faster and faster in the vibratory rate, and in the smallness of the unit that's vibrating, until you get to the tiniest quanta of energy. Tiniest quanta of energy. It is so tiny that it's only in combination that it makes up atoms, or makes up the components of atoms even. Physicists now work with these things theoretically. That energy is so fine that the entire universe is composed of it, and it's solid. You, Mars, the air, vacuum, the flowers, the candle flame, my thought, it's all made up of the same stuff. It's just in patterns. It's just in patterns. Now, if you are able, this is a fact I am telling you now from where I'm sitting, if you are able to pursue the discipline of extricating your awareness, your consciousness from your own senses and from your own thought, you become part of that finest energy. What are the qualities of that energy? It is totally interchangeable in everything in the universe. Totally interchangeable. So that if a part of it was a part of this flower at this moment, it might be a part of Mars the next moment, or a part of the vacuum the next moment. It's all the same stuff. At that point, when you look at, if you could look at the world, if you could clear away all that stuff out of your eyes and see the universe at that level of energy, if you could turn your receiver so you could get it at that level, all you would see was a homogeneous white light. You'd see the clear white light. You would see, you'd say, that is all and everything. And yet it has no form to it. Because it is where energy lies behind form. Where energy lies behind form. When you are able to extricate yourself from the time and space illusion, and it is an illusion as it turns out, the question is, who am I? Who am I? Am I this body? Am I these senses? Am I this thought process? I, cogito ergo sum. It's a lie. It's a lie. Sum ergo cogito is perhaps reasonable. That's a lie too, but so are all words. In Sanskrit, what happens when you pursue yoga, which means union, yoga or union, you go behind the form. You go into the place where it is all one. All one. That place in Sanskrit is called Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda is the kingdom of heaven. Ram Tirth, the poet, who was a realized being, describes Sat Chit Ananda from inside. He lives on the other side of the doorway. See, on the other side of the doorway, you see there's no doorway. There's only a doorway from this side. It's another paradigm. He says, I am without form, without limit. I am beyond space, beyond time. I am in everything. Everything is in me. I am the bliss of the universe. Everywhere am I. I am Sat, absolute existence, Chit, absolute knowledge, Ananda, absolute bliss, Tattvam Asi, I am that, Tattvam Asi, I am that. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Think of the fine energy now. What is the fine energy, the quality of the fine energy? It permeates everything. Remember I said about Padmasambhava, he is pure light, he is pure consciousness, he is pure love, he is pure wisdom, he is pure energy. Do you understand that identity? I am talking about a specific identity. Very cold, systematic identity. When you go up the pyramid, and this is what Plato suspected when he got into his realm of pure ideas. When you go up the pyramid, follow beauty all the way back. Follow love all the way back, behind interpersonal love. Follow energy back as the physicists are doing. You end up at the top of the place where it all turns out to be the same. Do you understand that that fine energy we've just been talking about is the same exact thing as what we call consciousness? The universe is conscious. It is consciousness. It is not self-conscious. It does not know it knows. It just is. It is. It is consciousness. Sat Chit Ananda. My guru, who is a guy that lives on the other side of the doorway, he just is. He doesn't sit around knowing he knows. The candle flame doesn't sit around saying, I am being a candle flame. It's just being a candle flame. If there is a requirement, a motive, a desire, desire brings the guru from being in the place where he is just like the candle flame, just part of consciousness, the vast pure energy that is consciousness, it brings him back down into form. Brings him down into form. Brings him down into knowing he knows. I mean, I meet the guru, and I'm there by chance, and I go up, and in a few minutes, he tells me all about things that have happened to me in my past. And he tells me things that he can't know by any means I know he knows, by any of the usual techniques of knowing one knows. So when he does that to me, he completely takes me the next step. He creates the faith. He blows my mind. Lest ye see miracles, ye will not believe, Christ said with great compassion. I was one of those people. It's the kind of Western cynicism that is the basis of science also. I'll entertain the hypothesis. You know, that's cynicism. The null hypothesis. The null hypothesis. There is no relationship until I can demonstrate with a certain degree of probability that there is a relationship.